This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 52 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is a part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. And today we're going to share a bit about an amazing adventure that I was privileged to take part in recently. And we also will check in with Fergus's creator, Gene Abernathy. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to The Horsemanship Radio. Thank you for joining us. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 1st and the 15th of the month, and today I have my producer, Jen, with me. Hi, Jen.
Hello, Debbie. How are you? I just saw you like 3 days ago.
I know. We're already back together again. I missed you.
I had so much fun. For folks who don't listen to the Horses in the Morning show and haven't heard about it yet, Glenn and I had a whirlwind tour of the Western United States last week. And part of that whirlwind tour is we got to go and visit Debbie and other family members at Flag Is Up Farm. And it was just lovely.
Oh, you're sweet. It was so fun to have you. I know we were tracking you from the Grand Canyon and watching your Facebook entries and pinging you a little bit by email too. But I wanted you so badly to get there by the time the Breeders Classic ran, and you did. It was really fun.
That was so cool. We kind of walked in the door just as the Classic was about to start.
Just about.
We were crossing our fingers in traffic because it was bumper to bumper traffic most of the way there. And we walked into the door and you already had the TV queued up and we all sat down and cheered. For American Pharoah.
Oh, just in time to watch that. That was just amazing. So it was really fun to have you and to have you for dinner at night and great company and the next day getting to ride. Yay.
So that was really the fun. Grand tour of the farm. So I got to see the Monty Roberts Join Up International Classroom.
Yeah, that's right.
And I got to see the round pen that is so famous for all of the Join Up International and Monty Roberts University videos that we get to enjoy.
That's right.
With the kind of has a deck around the outside. So you have a bird's eye view of what's happening. So I got to see that. And that was kind of cool. And then the best part is I got to go riding on one of the Willing Partners horses. I was riding Chasing My Stetson.
Yeah, he's a great one. He's a great one. But why were you in the back the whole time? Because he's so quiet.
Well, Chasing My Stetson moves about as fast as a cowboy hat on a calm day.
That's good.
He's a great confidence builder. He is so steady. He just cruises along, takes in the world at a quiet, slow pace. He would be a Southern gentleman.
He is. That's it. I can almost hear his drawl. Very good, Jen. I like that.
He would be a Southern gentleman. He would have a rocking chair on the front porch, and there would be a big vase of lilacs
a little sweet tea,
and he'd be hanging out there going.
But the cool part is he's only 5 years old. We were making him sound like he's 8 years
old. No, he's a baby.
He's a baby, and he's just so quiet, and he's got collar. He's really cute. You are lucky to have him.
Very fancy pony.
Yeah, he's a good one. And I was on Baron.
And you were on Baron.
And who was Glenn on? He was on.
No, I thought Glenn was on Baron.
He was on Baron. Who was I? I was on Shark, I think. I forgot.
Yeah, you were on the one with the really cool. Grayish dun color.
He's exactly right. It's a gray dun. He's so pretty with the dorsal and the whole thing. Yeah, we have like three of those right now. We love the Gruya.
Dun Grulla Central. What's the difference between dun and Gruya?
You know, I think Gruya is like a form of dun. That's a great question, though. Maybe somebody can write in and tell us. But yeah, I think it is a distinction because there's red duns and, you know, right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, they're right. They come in different shades, like just like roans do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Blue roans, red roans. Yeah, that's right. I think it's something like that.
We just made it up.
Yeah. If
and
not.
We even went over to, you have a little teensy weensy sort of abbreviated obstacle course on one part of the property over there. And we got to walk over there and ride through some of the little obstacles. And I was having difficulty asking Stetson to do a side pass because I was doing it wrong. So I watched you. On Baron. On Shark.
Oh, I was
on
Shark.
That's what I'm doing wrong. And I as soon as I did the leg aids correctly, he went zing right across. What a good boy.
This is all, well, you got to know where those buttons are. You know, we give you a day to figure
it out. I had the wrong button. I was hitting the shift key and I really needed to hit the control key.
Well, you did fine. It was really fun. And how about going around in that racetrack?
Well, going around the racetrack, I'm pretty sure I set the record for the slowest speed around that.
You were going backwards.
Yes, it was lovely. And I've never ridden on a thoroughbred track before. All of the racetracks I've ever ridden on were actually standardbred sulky tracks.
Oh, yeah. Very
different footing. So that was interesting to walk through that and experience what the footing is for a thoroughbred racehorse.
Did you find it really different? I don't even know what the
sulky. It's much deeper, obviously, because when you're on a sulky, you need to have the wheels going.
Of course. Yeah, that makes good sense.
The sulky track is a little bit more akin to what you might find on a really nice, if you were to have a gravel drive or a gravel aisle in your barn, the kind that packs hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really very DG. Firm.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very like fun. Our yard. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. What else? And of course, Glenn was just fascinated with the deer that live out there at Flag Is Up Farm and come up to the barn regularly.
He did great with the deer. Wasn't he so patient?
It was fascinating to watch him. It was cool to watch the deer, of course. But for me, knowing Glenn for the past 30 years, it was fascinating for me to watch him.
Yeah. Yeah, he seemed so, I don't know, underwater, you know, like the duck underwater. I don't know if he was like worried about it or anything, but he seemed so serene on the surface waiting for the deer. It is difficult to get those deer to completely, you know, trust that your heart rate racing or one flick of the eye or one flick of the finger it just drives them away. They're 100, as Dad always says, they're 100 times more the flight reaction of a horse. Yeah. So it's a great study in our body language, our body movements, our heart rate, our physio, you know, all that's involved in. And it's a great training for anybody who, you know, wants to be better around their horses. Just go try to get around the deer and you'll get better around your horses because they just don't give it any feet at all.
They don't give a millimeter. Now I'm going to take this little conversation here since you brought that up and make a little left-hand turn with it me thinking.
Yeah.
Working with what I think people call now is a remedial horse, a horse who has never had any specifically new age, natural horsemanship or anything like that. Just a plain old horse who's been worked with in a plain old way. When he's naughty, he gets a chain over his nose. When he's a good boy, he doesn't. His rider rides him with a crop or a spurs, but he's not been abused. He's just been worked with like a regular horse.
Okay.
When versus a horse who is a completely blank slate.
Yeah.
When you work with a horse like that and you first start to do join up with them.
Okay.
Does the human being need to amplify their equus language, or is it more a case of you use the same equus language you would with a blank slate horse, but it takes a different amount of time for the horse to understand it because he's basically been desensitized to his own language? Am I making that? Is that making any sense?
Let me see if I've got this straight. So we've got a blank slate over here. All he knows is his own language. It's their language. It's the horse language. We're just hoping we can get close to it and interpret it without a really bad accent, right? You know? And so then you've got also this other horse that's gone through all the traditional methods. And I assume when you say, you know, maybe a chain over the nose or something, he has experienced pain in the training and the dealing with the human beings. Am I right?
He has experienced that, but something else he's experienced, and I discovered this for myself when I started trying to use the equus language when I handle horses here at my place, just in my everyday experiences. I'm not making any giant efforts to go, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a horse trainer. I'm not, but I'm just trying to be better on a consistent basis so that when I talk to my horse, I talk to him in my best ability in a most equus-like language as I can.
Okay.
So whenever I was taught to approach a horse many, many years ago, I was taught to approach the horse, quote, from the front, obviously not directly in front because he can't see you, but from an angle from the front shoulder, you look right at the horse, you look him squarely in the eye, and you approach him with some amount of bodily language authority.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You pat the horse, and all these subtle things in my body language are very, very different when I am doing my best to speak to my horse in equus from the moment I walk out towards the horse. For a horse who's been handled in that traditional way, you walk squarely at him. You just walk up and throw a halter on his face, looking him right in the eye. Your hands are open, things like that. For the horse who's been handled that way, does he take a different amount of time, or does it take? You know how
when not
we're
really.
Human and we're talking to somebody who doesn't speak our language, we tend to yell.
Yeah, and wave our hands around a lot. And everything.
Do we tend to do that with equus language?
We do.
Is it counterproductive?
I would say yes. I mean, in the same way that a human who's trying to understand you and you just get louder and louder, you know, and try to communicate, it doesn't do any more good, right? You know, how you're trying to tell your spouse, you know, he doesn't understand you. Just speaking louder doesn't work any better.
If that person doesn't speak English, you yelling doesn't help.
Exactly. But we feel like, you know, maybe it'll get in there harder or something. No. So the simple answer really is that in the pure language of equus, that's what they learn from their parent, their mom in the field, right? And their aunt and their, you know, whoever they're out there with, they're learning that language. Stink eye means stink eye, and horse language means go away. So when we approach a horse with our eyes straight on, shoulder square, very aggressive, for them, that means aggressive. That means go away. So no matter how tolerant the traditionally trained and mature horse is, they are just that. They're being tolerant of us. When we look at them straight in the eye and maybe even snap our eyes on their eye and they don't move, that's because they've learned that they don't really mean that. They're just a poor little human being who doesn't understand that bothers me. And they might not even show irritation. But if you start with a blank slate, which is what you described, and you just go snapping your eyes on that, you know, in an area where they can get away, they will go, bye, I understand my language. And it is uncomfortable for the transition for a horse that has been trained in his own language and trusts the human not to create any pain, not to make him afraid, even by snapping eyes on and everything. And then you bring in a traditional person who needs to be kind of retrained from tradition. They have to tolerate us making mistakes, but they're wonderfully generous that way, Jen. It's like if you can deal with the deer and then you go to the horses and see how less flighty they are than the wild deer, because not too many of us work with non-domesticated horses like the wild Mustang. So we're going to assume that they kind of were raised up around a barn and they were halter led, you know, as a little weanling and, you know, all the things that got us around humans and horses together. So their flight mechanism is diminished quite a bit from a Mustang or a wild deer. And so you're going to assume that they're tolerating some stuff. And you're right. They tolerate a lot of our misgivings in the language. And they're okay with that. It's just like, you know, the tourist shop who wants the dollars from that tourist. They're like, okay, I know. If I put up with this, they'll feed me tonight, right? You know? Mm-hmm. I get that the horse gets and we get that we're going to hand that horse over to somebody who might have traditional muscle memory. But, you know, it's been fun to watch over the 25 years or so since Dad's first book came out that people are really trying. They don't just plan to go into the horse world anymore and invade that space without trying a little bit of trying for the horse, you know, and to try to break down some of those traditional barriers. Unfortunately, we're still if we run out of tools in our tool bag, we resort to a chain over the nose, which is really just a creator of an argument, you know. But if somebody really doesn't know what else to do, that's what they'll go to. So our job, our goal is to put the tools in everybody's hand that says you don't need to do that. You can take violence out of the training of horses and still find discipline at a championship level. And that's a tough concept for everybody to grab hold of. But I think incrementally they're getting closer to that.
Well, yeah, and it's fascinating to me is how such a small change can make such a big difference.
Yes, absolutely.
As I said at the beginning of this conversation, I'm not out to train any horses. The horse I'm talking about, Pablo, isn't even my horse. But I'm simply, to use the human language analogy again, I'm trying to enunciate my words correctly from his point of view.
That's all
I'm doing.
That's all you can do.
Huge difference in this horse.
I'm glad. I am so glad. He's so glad too. You know, it's so fun to watch their little eyes light up like, you understand what I'm talking about here. Or they go, oh, darn, I can't get away with that anymore either.
You know, yeah, this particular horse is going, oh, thank goodness. You're not so scary anymore.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, poor guy's terrified of his own shadow. And then we add scary humans to the mix and just made a bad thing worse. So it's just amazing to watch the change in his body language, because you could actually see the fear in him. He was just on edge all the time, and it's made a big difference. So it's very interesting to hear how the training process, as it's meant to be used in the equus language, you can take that and you create a willing partner's horse, but you also create a horse who is tolerant of the uninformed horse person who doesn't speak equus necessarily, but is making those efforts. You're teaching him the language so well that he can do just the reverse. He can try to understand the human who only speaks a little bit of equus.
That's right. Yeah. We're not really teaching them the language at all. I think it's sort of the reverse, that they're teaching us the language enough so that we can say, okay, here's where we're going to make some mistakes as humans, and if you'll tolerate. But a lot of that, Jen, is picking the right horse in the beginning too. I have to add that, you know, a demeanor of a horse that is just at 5 years old, you know, to be that calm with these willing partners.
You know what?
Yeah.
Let's take that topic on the next show. Let's talk about
The
process of choosing a horse that is a blank slate and some of the things that you guys look for.
Okay. That would be a good one. Yeah.
We got a jam-packed show. So we're going to have to stop gabbing, because I will go on and on and on about this topic.
I love that too. Yeah, that's right. Well, we've got a wonderful interview that we were able to record earlier with Jean Abernathy when she was about to come out with, and it is just now out, The Essential Fergus. Jean Abernathy is a cartoonist, and she has for years, a lot of people will recognize her talent with the horse that everybody loves, and Fergus is still trying to figure us all out. That's Fergus. And then I would love to tell you a little bit about how I spent a recent little foray abroad. Buckingham Palace and all that stuff,
Alrighty, and right after this from IFA.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at ifa.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Jean Abernathy has been creating equestrian cartoons and illustrations for over 30 years now. Jean left the family farm in her childhood to enroll in the equine studies program at Humber College, and that's in Toronto. And then she later earned her art degree at Ontario College of Art. Now that's called the OCAD University up there in Canada. And she was majoring in illustration. So her illustrations, both comical and instructional, have been published in many equine periodicals across the United States and Canada. She's illustrated instructional books by my father, clinician and trainer Monty Roberts, and the Olympic equestrian Peter Leone, and polo instructor Reggie Ludwig. I hope I didn't say that wrong. And she also has built saddles, worked on as a barn hand, a carriage driver, a trail guide. I mean, she is the consummate horsewoman. She is the creator of Fergus the Horse, who has just launched his first book, The Essential Fergus the Horse. Welcome, Jean Abernathy. She doesn't have Fergus with her today, but she's up in Canada hailing in from near Toronto. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Hi, Jean. How you been up there? Is it getting cold yet?
Not yet. We're having a beautiful fall. We're having a lovely fall. I'm sitting here looking out at the soybean field as we speak. It's a lovely day.
Beautiful. And I know the photo that we're going to use in the notes today, people can go there and see what you look like and see Willow, your horse that you take up in those beautiful trails with you.
Yes, yes. I'm very lucky to have such a pretty little horse. She did a good job all summer.
Yeah, good. Yeah, way up in Canada. So is that one of your favorite things to do when you're off riding is think about the next thing you're going to be doing or don't think about anything at all?
Oh, I always come back from a ride inspired. Mm-hmm. Always, always, always. Whether it's, you know, I come back inspired to build saddles and draw pictures and just about do everything.
You are amazing. You are a Renaissance woman in this day and age, one who is not only artistic, and for people who have not found Fergus, just put Fergus the horse in Google and go see what you come up with. You will be laughing. It's one of those that you just can't stop reading one. You got to read the others. And I know you have a Cafe Press site that I love the things that I can give as gifts. And it's a lot of fun. But you also make saddles. You're a carriage driver. We put all this in your introduction, but tell us a little bit about which came first, Fergus or the saddle?
Oh, that was a combination, I think. Mm-hmm. The first saddle I built, I was 18 years old. Mm. And then I didn't build one again for quite a long time till my kids were born. And so there's always an itch to build saddles. I've built about six of them.
Is that right?
And Fergus kind of evolved along with. I drew realistic pictures since I was a kid, and I was always drawing humorous pictures as well. So my drawing evolved both in a comical side and a not-so-comical side.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. You do draw technical illustrations. I know you did the illustrations for my father's book, From My Hands to Yours, yes. His only textbook. And I was kind of wondering about that. Do you think you have more talent for the technical drawings or for the cartoon style?
Oh, it's the same talent. It's, mm-hmm. It depends how you want to put it down, really. I've mm-hmm. done illustrations for Quarter Horse Journal for quite a number of years, too, that are on the technical side. And I've always loved the challenge of drawing realistically mm-hmm. and getting it accurate.
That's the thing. I mean, Fergus's character, one thing that I just admire about Fergus is not only your sense of humor. That's a given. They're hilarious. But that your style stays really consistent over a lot of years. Is there a trick to that, or is that just because you really have nailed the style?
I think it evolves slowly, and you'll see this when the book comes out. Some of the cartoons I was doing in the 80s, they don't look like my present drawing style, and that evolves over time. I think that's inevitable with any mm-hmm. artist.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. You mentioned just now the book, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, too, is I'm remiss in not having you on earlier since we have a relationship going back a ways. But now that I've got an excuse, you are coming out with The Essential Fergus the Horse. Tell us how that's going to be.
Oh, I'm excited. This is a project that's been, 30 years in the making, ever since I started drawing cartoons. And my first ones were published early 80s. I did standardbred cartoons all through those years when the standardbred industry was booming.
Yeah.
And for 30 years, people would look at my cartoons and say, oh, do you have a book of these? And, mm-hmm. you know, up until this year, the answer has been not yet. Mm-hmm. And now that answer has changed. And so I'm excited about it.
That's great. So where do we get that? I haven't seen it yet, sadly. I know that you've got it out now and it's out and about. Is it going to be on your website? How do people get it?
There's a link on Fergus's Facebook page where you can get it. Trafalgar Square Books is the publisher. Those girls have been fabulous from the get-go. And they made this book into a thing of beauty. So if you Google Trafalgar Square Books, you can get it there. It is available on Amazon as well.
Okay, great.
It will be in bookstores. It'll be, I think, in some of the larger chains of bookstores.
Without having even seen it, I'm going to say get it for Christmas for all your horsey friends because it's going to be hilarious. I I just couldn't resist going back through some of my old favorite Fergus cartoons, getting ready for this interview. And
well, Debbie,
tell me what
are some of your favorite ones.
Oh my gosh, that is not even fair. There's so give me a subject to talk about. But you know, one thing that just, I about died when I opened up Dad's From My Hands to Yours book, his technical book. It's, you know, his byline is Lessons from a Lifetime of Learning. So you can imagine, you know, it's a big, thick book. And I opened right up to the page where he's using a dummy rider on. So if a horse looks like it's going to possibly buck with its first saddle, and there's indicators, you know, the muscle tensing and all that, Dad will, if he has it handy, he will put a dummy rider up, meaning a mannequin rider. Yeah. No heart, no soul. Yeah. And you did, for your illustrations in his textbook, you did a dummy rider in there. And it is so cute because the first two are like really, they look just like you might photograph a man putting a mannequin rider up on there, but it's an illustration. But the third one has the mannequin up, and the mannequin's head, which is pretty much just like a scarecrow kind of head, like a sack over his head kind of thing. You know, he doesn't have a helmet on or anything.
Yeah.
He turns toward the reader and has this big wink on his face,
goodness.
He's up there.
I forgot all about that. Oh, I have to do that. I couldn't resist. I forgot you could, that I did that.
That's what I was going to ask you. Could you resist putting a little cartoon in there? No.
How could I not? I mean, that thing is just funny no matter how you slice it. When that dummy comes out of there, you think, oh, my goodness.
Cute.
It's hilarious to watch that.
You've seen him actually put one up, right, and yes, have the horse buck around a bit?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny because often he will put a helmet on for live demonstrations so that people are kind of, even though it's a mannequin rider, you know, we put the helmet on, probably keeps the head on the thing as well. But the funny thing is the head rocks left and right, you know, as the horse is bucking, unlike a human head that goes more back and forth. Yeah. And the funny thing is it looks like Stevie Wonder when he sings. So that usually people start laughing, you know.
How can that not be funny? That cracks me up when he puts something on.
So cute. And the poor horse doesn't, you know, he bucks four or five times and then goes, what's everybody laughing at, right?
Yeah.
The fourth illustration that you have in there is that the horse really starts to break in two. And your little mannequin rider has this groany, grunty look on his face like, oh, no. It's so cute, Jean. But some of my favorites. Okay, so some of my favorites when I was going back through the actual files was you have one on breathing that is so cute. And it makes such a great point. And I don't know if you remember it, but basically you got a bubble over Fergus's head and it says, oh dear, she's nervous. Her heart rate is up. I better be ready for something really intense, right? And now she's running toward a jump. Of course, she's going to jump Fergus. And he puts the screech on and he says, oh my goodness, no, I can't jump that. My rider is too tense. Everything will go wrong. Of course, then the little girl is consoled by her trainer because she's landed on the ground. And the trainer is saying, you know, you really need to breathe deeply into your belly. So the next frame shows Fergus and the little girl up singing Do, Re, Mi, Fa. So she's breathing while singing the scale, right? And Fergus looks back at her like, oh, good heavens. Well, at least she's not worried. I can relax now. He sails over the jump and he says, wow, she's deep breathing. That's the trick. And at the end, he has a first place ribbon put on his bridle. And she's standing there very proud with her arms around him and says, oh, Fergus, you're such a star. You take my breath away.
Oh, my goodness. That's back a few years, isn't it?
Do you remember it?
Yeah, no, actually, but
I believe
I do. Now that as you describe it, I remember it. Yeah,
you're
I did
so
several clever. There. Yeah.
Yes, on that breathing, it's so important. Now, you're up there in the trails, and you—I know you're a trail guide, and you work with people sometimes when you're out on your horseback too. So, tell me about breathing. Tell me how much you emphasize breathing in your riding.
Oh well. You know, when you're up there in the trees in July and everything's green, you're on an oxygen high anyway. I sing often. I sing for two reasons. We don't want horses spooking at bears. Mm-hmm. And so I have a bear song that I sing at the top of my lungs when we get into where there's lots of raspberry bushes and lots of fruit for the bears. Mm-hmm. And that keeps the horses from spooking. The problem is not bears. The problem is spooking horses, and our horses are carrying beginners.
Yeah, yeah.
If a horse goes sideways, they can't sit on that.
Right.
So
help us.
I find when I'm just out there by myself in the woods daydreaming, I sing anyway. And
give us a little bit of the song, so in case we run into a bear, we got to hear it.
Oh,
you don't have to do it at the top.
Way in the North Country, there lives a fiddler fair. The townsfolk call him Old Mad John, brother to the bear. There's about six verses, and so that lasts me for half a mile of trail.
That's great. You do that at the top of your lungs. I love it. That's great.
I do where the bear tracks are, yeah.
Yeah? Have you ever encountered one?
I've seen bear two times, and both times, thankfully, they were at a distance, and they were running away.
Good.
So nobody got hurt. I have one moose story, and I had to put a little girl back on.
Mm.
However, thank heavens, she wasn't hurt, and now she's got a big story to tell.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Kept her in horses that way. Good job.
Yeah, she didn't even see the moose. So when her mother asks her, what did you do all summer? The answer is, I didn't see a moose. The horse saw it, though.
They're huge. They're absolutely frightening. I agree. You know, I'm with the horses on that one. They're huge.
That's just no fun.
You live in the most beautiful country, though, and I think anybody who ever rides should get up into Canada at least once in their life. Yeah?
It is beautiful here. I have not been into Western Canada. Northern Ontario here, the provincial park where I trail guide, has quite a logging history, and it is Canada's oldest provincial park. And we ride out on the logging roads, and it is absolutely stunning. And there's great stands of sugar maple and yellow birch and black cherry, and it's far enough south that there's quite a bit of deciduous forest. It is absolutely beautiful.
Oh, this time of year, do you still have the leaves up there?
Yeah.
You're in October.
I'm at my home now, which is 5 hours south and west. So I'm into farmland here now and out of the bush.
Oh, that's right, soybeans.
Yeah, the colors, I think the colors will be right at their peak or a little past up there now. And where I live here in the farmland, we're getting into some pretty colors now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jean, it's always wonderful to talk to you because you know the inside of the horse as well as you know the outside of the horse. And that's what I love about your messages, your cartoons, your humor, and everything about what you've done with Fergus. You and I chatted a few weeks ago about whether Fergus should ever have a voice and whether he should be animated or not. And it's a funny concept, isn't it? Because horses don't have voices necessarily. They do communicate. What are your plans in the future for Fergus? Are you doing what you need?
I would love to see him animated. That would be a huge learning curve for me because I'm not trained in animation. So I have to work with a crew. As far as giving him a voice, Debbie, that's a tough one. I don't know how that might involve because I think one of Fergus's successes is that he doesn't speak or think like a human.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I'm not quite sure how we would present that if he were to be animated. That remains to be seen, I guess, because there are times when he could say some very funny things, and there are other punchlines where it's better if he doesn't talk. And so we'd really have to think that one through.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't want to ruin anything that you've done because it is just too perfect what you do with him.
Oh, thank you.
It is. It's just really funny that I was looking at one more cartoon here. I can't resist. It's Join Up with the Older Horse. Because a lot of people think, oh, well, Join Up is just for the first saddle and, you know, build that trust and then away you go. You don't do Join Up. But really, the Join Up concept is one that we live with for the life of the horse, you know, if best served for the horse. But a lot of horses have not had a Join Up. They might have already been ridden and everything for years. And people ask, can we still do Join Up with the older horse? And you did a cartoon on that is so cute. It has Dad in it, of course, so I got to bring Monty Roberts into this. But it says one horse is talking to a mule, and the horse says to the mule, "Who's the cowboy, Grace?" And Grace says, That's Monty Roberts. He's a famous trainer. And the horse looks in there and says, I've never heard or read anything about him. And then the mule says, well, he's discovered a way to communicate with horses using our own language. And you're going to be in his join-up demonstration. And the horse looks like, me? And then the horse looks very much like Fergus, by the way. And so the Fergus is backing up and says, wait a minute. I'm an experienced horse. I already know how to train people. And he shows him thinking about this person that's all wrapped up with ropes and lost, just totally lost. And he says, you just have to show him who's boss. That's Fergus talking. So 20 minutes later, there's Monty walking out with Fergus just following him along. And Grace is standing there waiting outside the round pen for Fergus. And Fergus says, Grace, that was so cool. Now I get it. So the lesser beasts can rise to the equine level of training. People want to be our partners. I never looked at it that way before. He says to Grace, all these years, I thought people were stupid. And then Grace says, Fergus, people aren't stupid. They're misunderstood.
Yes.
That's clever.
Just turning it right around, isn't it?
It is. And I love the way you have people think about horses and how they think.
I love to reverse that. Yeah, that's one of the funny things. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that, but I brought Monty's own joke back to him because it's been several years since I watched Monty do a demonstration, but that's one of his own jokes that say, you know, no horse has ever seen or heard or read anything about me.
Right.
And so I put that joke right in. That's Monty's joke, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's true because a lot of people think he just walks into the round pen and the horse is just going to do whatever he is thinking about, but that's right. He doesn't know you from Monty. So anyway, those are fun. I hope people will get the book. I hope that we'll give it for Christmas presents like crazy. And I hope that they come to appreciate you as much as I do, Jean.
Oh, it's good fun. Yeah, the book is good fun. In fact, I just finished making yet another comic about the mounting block. There's a series of about 8 of them now. With the mounting block, and that poor kid, she just can't get on Fergus. He does something ridiculous every time, and she ends up on the ground. And it goes on and on and on. And so, I get a kick out of doing it myself. And when people will write in across Facebook and they'll say, oh, Fergus reminds me of my horse.
And
I couldn't be paid a higher compliment, really, than
That's nice. Do you ever just giggle out loud when you think of these things?
Oh, yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, or the horses that I'm working with would do outrageous things. And, you know, you look at them, and in the trail guiding job, there's a string of about 25 to 30 horses there. And then, of course, there's my own little mare.
Yeah.
And, they'll do something weird, and you step back from them, and you say, what are you thinking? And that's the confound right there that inspires so much of it. You take a look at that horse logic doesn't line up with our logic at all. Yeah. And there's the grist for the humor right there.
That's it. You're a clever girl. Thank you, Jean. Well, thank you for joining us today on Horsemanship Radio. I hope we can have you back for one of Fergus's best tips. Would you come back and give us a Fergus tip?
Oh, yeah, I would come back and give you a Fergus tip.
That's great. Well, we're going to disturb your beautiful Canadian environment one more time and have you back again. And maybe by then I will have seen your book.
Well, that would be great, Debbie. Thank you so much for this opportunity. This has been fun.
Oh, absolutely a pleasure to have you on Horsemanship Radio. Jean Abernathy.
Thank you.
We all hear about omega-3 and how important it is for your horse's nutrition, but why? Well, simply put, horses were created to get all of their nutrition from live natural grasses. Omega-3 is an essential fat found in many types of live grasses, and it's critical to the horse's health. If they were living on live grasses 24/7, they would be receiving enough omega-3. But in today's world, most horses are fed commercial feed and forage as their primary nutrition, and most of these are lacking in omega-3. That's where Omega Fields comes in. All of Omega Fields' flax-based products provide a balanced essential profile of omega-3, 6, 9 and may be helpful in alleviating problems related to skin, coat, hoof, joint, and sand colic. One of Omega Fields' terrific products is Omega Horseshine. Omega Horseshine is an omega-3 stabilized ground flaxseed supplement for horses to help maintain a shiny, healthy coat, strong, solid hooves, and top performance for horses in all life stages. Omega Fields provides the best human-grade, non-GMO ground flax that can help horses with dry, scaly, itchy skin, joint pain and inflammation, poor hoof growth, allergies, and more. Don't just listen to Debbie and I. Alexandra, a customer of Omega Fields, says any horse I ever own, I will feed them Omega Horseshine and I will recommend it to anyone. You can get your Omega Horseshine today at OmegaFields.com or just for our listeners, get 15% off using the coupon code Monty2015. All one word, it's Monty2015 for 15% off your next order at OmegaFields.com. That's OmegaFields.com.
To support the Horsemanship Radio Show. Now, my favorite part of the day is we get to chit-chat a little bit about your most recent trip to England, where you got to meet not just Her Royal Highness Duchess of Cornwall, Camilla, to us plain folks, but the Queen of England, too. So explain to me how that all came about and what this is about.
Yeah, surprise, the Queen, too. That was fun. So there is a wonderful and equestrian animal charity called The Brook, and it is over 80 years old now, and it was started by Dorothy Brook, and she was one of these lovely ladies who didn't have to do it. She had the means to do it, and she started going to Egypt and India, taking care of horses and helping these horses that, you know, were pulling the brick wagons and, you know, working equids, we call them, the donkeys, the mules. And they're always doing a great work. It's like Doctors Without Borders, but for horses, you know. It's really cool. They send their veterinarians all over the world. And so they named Dad, Monty Roberts, as the global ambassador. They had a few ambassadors, but he was named global ambassador of the Brook, and he went to India. And so they decided to put on a bit of a fundraiser for their really generous donors in England there at Buckingham Palace. And as you said, the Her Royal Highness, the Duchess of Cornwall, Camilla, said, you know what, we're going to put on an event with Monty Roberts as global ambassador, and we're going to demonstrate, join up to our best and closest friends. And so they sent out the invitations, and Dad was on tour over there already. And so they said, it'll be Buckingham Palace. And he went, Buckingham Palace, I always do Windsor Castle or someplace outside the Ring Road. And Ring Road is that really hugely busy area where you don't go inside if you can help it. And you certainly don't drive in it if you can help it. And you certainly don't take a horse trailer inside of it if you can help it. But they actually have...
It's sort of like the inner loop in Washington, D.C.
Yes, exactly. Only older and smaller streets and, you know, right? Oh my gosh, it's just crazy. And you have to get a special license just to get a horse trailer in there, a special license, like a parade license, you know what I mean? And so we got set out to find this breeder who has, he breeds these babies, and he's got 2-year-olds in the pasture right now. And Ian Vandenberg and his wife Sandy do a great job outside the Ring Road. And so they loaded up one of those horse trucks that they have over there, you know. They're great, but they're still kind of big for London. And they did the, I think it was 12 miles and 3 or 4 hours it's crazy, into London. And we all met at Buckingham Palace by special invitation. And you want to just hear it like I'm just rote memory, or
just tell me I want every single detail.
Every syrupy detail. Okay, yes. All right. So when we met there, you know, I went into this little shop because I was walking around Buckingham Palace and
just
trying to figure
to
out
say, the, in your the, lifetime, I was walking around Buckingham Palace.
Well, I was actually just trying to find the gate to the Royal Mews. But you know, I knocked on one door and they said, oh no, the Royal Mews is closed for the day. Special event. And I went, No, I'm at the special event. Yes, show us the papers, you know. And so I did get in, and I was the first one there. So I got to see this lovely little two-year-old when she came in through the big double doors that they had. And she's like blowing steam out her nose. She's all a fur ball. Her ears are all fluffy. And she's like, where am I? And why am I here? You know, she was adorable. So we actually just took her into the arena. It's where all the carriages are kept and then the carriage horses. Mm-hmm. So when you see the great estate dinners and everything, like they just had the Chinese the night before, when you see all the queen getting in, that's where they're coming from, out of Buckingham Palace at the Royal Mews, and then just going around, you know, in London there, and their streets are all shut down. So they just, they're the big drafts, you know, that pull mm-hmm. the big wagons. And so we got a tour of that, and this little filly was like, oh, you know, I'm not as comfortable as all these big boys in here. But she seemed to settle a little bit, enough that I thought, oh, good, we're going to pull this off. Mm-hmm. And she was kept in one of the carriage stalls. And then eventually we got to go through the secret door up into the little carriage where the carriage people
so
get warmed
really
up.
There are secret doors in the castle.
There's secret doors. It's hidden behind this. It's like a panel. And we got to open the panel and go upstairs and stay warm in there because it was cold already, even though it's just the middle of October. And then we waited. And then all the guests came in, sat in this little stands. There's about 25 in the little stand set up in the arena with nice footing. And then we had set up a portable round pin in there, 50 feet across. So it's kind of an intimate little moment at one end of the arena. And then they let us all in when we came down, the crew and everybody, the horse handler came down, and we set up on the on the stands there. And I was with Katie Cunningham from our affiliate, Lead Up International. She flew up from Guatemala to be there. So we sat together, huddled. And then they had a surprise for us. They said that Her Royal Highness HRH, Duchess of Cornwall, was going to be coming in, but we had a surprise visit from the Queen today, who came in this most gorgeous royal purple color. She was totally adorable. And so everybody was like, blah, 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 you know, so there was a big murmur across the thing.
Oh, bad. Yeah. Oh, are you allowed to murmur?
Yeah, we murmured on purpose.
Now,
yeah.
Once she's in the room, are you allowed to murmur? No murmuring.
No, when she got close, we stand, and okay. Then we got instructed to stand. And then when she sat down and Camilla sat down, or sorry, Her Royal Highness sat down and her lady-in-waiting sat down, that's Her Royal Highness's. But the Queen didn't have a lady-in-waiting. She was just on her own with her own handbag. And, you know, she was on her own. She was the surprise visit. And then it was cute because I thought it was cute because the Royal Highness had – this was her party, right? She had invited, she's the president of the Brook, and this was her party. But the Queen kind of took over as tour guide because this was her guy, Monty Roberts. And it was adorable because she was like, you know, leaning over and describing a lot of things going on, and they were having a great time. It was, you know, it was what you could tell. It was really exciting. And so Dada brought in this Jess, blowing and, you know, wild-eyed, whites of her eyes showing everywhere. And he began to describe to the trainers of the carriage horses were in the back. And Jen, you would just crack up. It looked like a scene right out of Downton Abbey. You know, do you ever watch Downton Abbey?
Yep.
Because they're all lined up there in all their perfect uniforms and everything. And they stayed back there to watch, and then we're in the stands just to enjoy. And he started off with a join-up, and he describes join-up. And this was the first time Camilla actually had ever seen, if I can call her that, a live demonstration. In case you're listening, I'm sorry, Her Royal Highness. but that would be great. But he really did a thorough job of describing it. And I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, it was an average join up. But people were, you know, talking about it. It was a little, you know, it's like, wow, that's cool. But I'd say it was just average. And I thought, well, you know, good. I'm glad it was a safe one. You know, and then, he put as he does, he's going to have a saddle on this little baby in about, who's two, in about 30 minutes or less. So he gets the flat saddle out and puts that on. And I can tell the way he's standing that she can feel this girth, and she's going to get a little cat back. So she got this round back on her, as we all know what that looks like, going,
that
ooh.
That usually means there's going to be fireworks.
Could be an explosion any minute. So he tucked it up a little bit tighter, and he does this funny dialogue where he talks about the horse, in this case, she, Jess, saying, what's that, Mr. Roberts? What's that for? Well, it's a seat. A seat for what, Mr. Roberts? It's a seat for Jake. Who's Jake and why does he need a seat? You know, and he goes into the dialogue back and forth with Mr. Roberts. So when she explodes with this girth on, and what she did was she actually went on her hind feet and just kind of shook all over like, whoa. And when she did that, Dad said, Mr. Roberts, you think that if you were going to do your first demonstration at Buckingham Palace, you would have chosen an easy horse. And it just sort of broke the tension at that point. And everybody was allowed, you know, allowed themselves to titter a bit. And it was just adorable after that because everything she did was feminine and cute and expressive and totally honest. And then Jay got up and she didn't do one wrong thing. She didn't take one bad step. She just went around there and walked, and that's all they asked for on the first day, and it's all Jake wanted for the rider on the first day. And she was happy to have somebody on her back at that point. So it was just amazing to watch. And then they opened up the panels, and Katie and I got a tap on the shoulder and said, Her Royal Highness and Her Majesty would like to meet you too and talk about the Horse Sense for Leaders and the Lead Up International that Monty was talking about from the round pin. So we got our few minutes with the two royals, and then Dad joined the conversation and we got to talk a little bit more about it. And then we all had the tea. We all went over to the Crown Equerries. Colonel Toby Brown's home is right there on the grounds, and we had tea after that and got to, and the Queen did peel off and go back to the palace. Oh, she's in the palace, but go back to her home. And HRH stayed there and had tea with us for, oh gosh, I'd say it was at least another hour and a half or so, where everybody got to meet and talk and have a little presentation about the brook. And Toby Brown's home is just beautiful. I mean, you can imagine what, you know, a home off the on Buckingham Palace, off the Royal Mews looks like. And they were so gracious. And we got time to share. I gave her the book, Horse Sense for Leaders, that Dr. Sue Kane and I wrote, and Dad signed it, and we talked about, you know, doing more with the brook and more with Horse Sense for Leaders. And I could say, you know, you could just die happy at that point that we've done, we're completing our mission statement as best possible.
Well, you know, something like that is such a special thing that most people don't even bother to put it on their bucket list, you know?
Now, yeah, it's hard to control.
You found out and you were told that is it Her Majesty, that's the Queen,
yes,
right?
Yes,
she's Her Majesty,
right,
versus Her Royal Highness.
Yes.
Was going to be coming into the room. Did you, yes, feel like you had to sit up straighter?
Yeah, probably. Cross my legs, you know.
I only saw one photograph from that day. And I was trying to pick you out in the back of the crowd, but they had the focus really narrow on it, so you really couldn't make out faces very well.
You can't miss me. I'll send a photo. I'll put it in the show notes.
Everybody looked like they were sitting up ramrod straight.
Yeah, it's true. It's, well, plus they were English, right? So, I mean, everybody was the Royal Mews after all. But yeah, I was in this little, I had my friends dress me because I don't know what do you dress in? I don't, you know.
What do you dress in to go see the Queen? Hello?
A little red riding outfit, is a riding hood, you know. It's this cape thing. It's bright red, and so if you see the audience, there's this little bright red spot in there. That's
me.
I'll
have to look for that.
And yeah, all my friends said, yeah, that's, oh, good. At least we could see who you were in that little spot. So anyway, yeah, that's, and you know, boots. You got to wear a skirt though. You know, it's the Royals. So yeah, so, you know, it's raining. Of course, it's cold, but you know,
it's always raining. It's always
thick,
cold.
Thick tights. That's what you wear. But.
So when as the process of join up happened, were you able to, was there conversation that you were, was there commentary besides what Monty was doing? So Monty was the one doing all of the commentary.
Yeah.
And that's what you guys got to hear as the process went on.
Yeah. That's just, yeah, it's the Monty show out there. He's describing, he's talking, he's one of those rare clinicians who can actually go off and diversify his conversation about, you know, horse sense and healing and all these things that are affecting human life out there in the human world while he's training a horse that is, you know, trying to buck off saddle. And while he's also describing the process as it's going and what she's probably going through in her decision-making, her choice-based gentling that's going on out there. Because he likes people to understand the process that the equine brain is going through. You know, the part where she doesn't trust us. We all want that interpreted for us, don't we? We want to see when he says, watch this ear, watch the outside ear looking to, you know, the outside of the round pen, watch the inside ear locking on me. She didn't at first because she was wild out of the field, you know, and she didn't know where to look. But once you start to establish leadership out there, that inner ear locks on him because now that's becoming a priority to her. Something's going on in the inside of that round pen that she needs to focus on because that might be become a predator or it might become an ally. And the cool thing is you become in that position. If you're a leader who doesn't hurt her, you become an ally. And she has her very own predator and she likes that. You know? Right. And so for them, that's a degrees of accepting, it's degrees of trusting, and it's degrees of empowerment really for her choice based, transition that she's going through out there. We want to know what that is looking like and sounding like. We want to know what Monty's thinking a little bit about. We want to know how he's interpreting her thinking. And so all that's going on actually at the same time that she's being in 30, 35 minutes, she's getting her first saddle, bridle, and rider up. He actually didn't even put a bridle in her mouth, as I recall, because he uses the dually halter, you know, with the, he snaps the reins on that. He doesn't even want the chance that she might step on a rein or something. And there's
it doesn't take much for a horse who's never worn a bridle. The first time you put that bit in, you really don't want to do that if you have any chance at all of that getting yanked on for any reason.
There's just, it's not worth it because really all you're trying to do is be a side pull there and just get her nose going left, right, and back. He puts the long lines on, the double long lines on first, and he does ground driving first with that saddle on, and he wants to put in he wants to put in a steering column and some brakes and a little reverse gear too, before he puts Jake up. You know, that's all part of the process of her understanding what we're asking liking it. Actually, they have a little fun out there. It is fun to watch him do the double line lunging and get a few turns on it. And then the first backup of her life, which is really a trusting thing for a horse to do when you can't see behind you entirely, you know, to back up is really, it's like giving up your feet. And a lot of people say, oh, don't train especially in England, don't train that backup. There's really no reason for a horse to go back if they're in dressage or something. They'll say that, and it's just not true. When you control those feet, everybody knows this part, but yeah, you don't get a nappy horse. That was part of the, you know, that balking or refusal. Mm-hmm. You don't get that from teaching a horse to back up. You just actually give them some more confidence on your driving skills, because everything you do that doesn't hurt them actually logs in their brain, or Dad calls it their little computer, that it is a safe thing to do now.
Fascinating stuff. Yeah. Now, this was one that was Jess one of Her Majesty's horses, or is this one that was just...
Just out of the field. The horses that they're there at the Royal Mews are just the big carriage horses. So they didn't bring in any of the thoroughbreds. Dad actually right from there went straight back to Sandringham, and that's where he was helping start the 2-year-olds and training the thoroughbreds that she races around the world. So that would be extraordinary and not necessary. You just really need a horse is a horse. It doesn't matter really their breeding or anything else. Their first join up experience in pure equus is pretty predictable. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, he's been getting a saddle, bridle, and rider on a horse's back in 30 minutes or less, no matter the size, no matter the conditions, if it's an unstarted horse. Doesn't matter if it's a 9-year-old horse or a 2-year-old horse. It really doesn't if it's the first saddle, bridle, and rider. They all are pretty predictable. Might sound demeaning. I mean that they have a process that they have to go through and you can't violate it, but it's much quicker and accepting of them than the traditional methods, which are 6 to 8 weeks, you know, traditionally, really to get all that stuff going, the backup, the long lining, that, you know, all that. And this is, I mean, she's not ready for the Olympics after 30 minutes. She's got a long way to go after that. But she's had a great start, a really positive start, and she's happy to be there. And she's happy with humans, you know. Right. It is kind of fun for them to – I've heard people say, oh, round penning, aren't they afraid of you? That's why that send away, that's that flight mechanism. No, it's just – it's natural for them to be on a flight mechanism. They're not afraid of you any more than they would be just tearing through a field. I don't – you know.
If you watch a new horse being introduced into a – a large field full of horses, they will move away from each other before they will go towards one another. It's like, well, you're new. I need to stay away from you and check you out and make sure you're not going to eat me before I go up and say good morning. That's normal for them. I think, and that's a good point to wrap this up. That's a very, very important point to emphasize here is round pen work is not there to cause the horse to be afraid. Unfortunately, I've seen it many, many times. People put a horse in a round pen and they get the horse moving around the round pen, but they don't have they have the wrong intent. They just want to get the horse moving around because a fear-based notion that the horse needs to move fast, get tired, move away from me.
Yeah.
And it can go very, very wrong in that you create fear in the horse by scaring them out to the outside of the pen. And when he stops going around the pen, he does it out of exhaustion, not out of confidence in your ability to be his little herd leader.
Well, the simple answer on that is a flight animal has a release. Their flight mechanism is their default. That's what kept them alive for millions of years ahead of us, you know, by the way. They've been around longer. So the flight mechanism is a natural occurrence for them. It is, please give me this energy released. And the round pen is nothing more than a flow of energy. It allows them to have a flow of energy without you walking 3 miles to catch up with them. So it isn't a fear. It shouldn't be a fear-based chase them kind of thing. It should be just a release of that flight mechanism, letting release that energy, showing it from both sides of their eyes, because as you know, both sides of the brain, you know, and so you turn them once or twice and start to get that language, and they will, just like a deer in the wild, they'll come full circle. All flight animals travel in big circles, and they do that because of the predatorial regions. So it's all a natural thing if it's done correctly. But again, learn the language and do it correctly, or just hope you're as close as you can and your horse will tolerate it. There's our lesson.
I think you can, if your intent is to not cause harm or fear or pain, the horse is going to be, I think, instinctively try hard to understand our best feeble attempts at equus.
Yes, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was fascinating. And once again, we've gabbed on a long time. But I think we need to move along. That was a fascinating thing, and I'm very jealous. I want to see the picture of you sitting in the stands at the event.
Look for the red spot. That's right.
For the red spot. But I think we need to hear from our monthly trainer tip.
Please do. This is from Carol Herder of Cavallo Horse and Rider, a great tip from a wonderful horsewoman. Welcome back, Carol Herder. We're so happy that you agreed to come back and give us a trainer's tip from all your years of experience with horses. And I know that you spend a wee bit of time yourself traveling the world and taking care mentally and physically of yourself and not just your horses. I wonder what you might have for us in store today under your trainer's tip.
Well, I have just returned from a week of silence at a yoga meditation retreat, and it did have quite a bit to do with horses because I wanted to spend that time finalizing my book, which is in the final editing stages, and it's called "There Are No Horseshoes in Heaven."
I love
so
it.
So you can look for that.
But
the big aha for me was the silence, because horses live in silence. And it just gave me this other understanding of what their lives are like, because they don't have these past preoccupations in their mind or their future thoughts about, you know, what am I going to wear tonight, or, you know, what am I going to be doing, what am I going to make for dinner. You know, they live in present time, and they do that because they're in silence with themselves, and it's self-referral. So what I would suggest, if you really want to understand equus, is take a half a day or a full day and do not talk.
Oh my gosh. Did we do that? Did you do it?
Yeah.
You did it.
That would kill me.
I know, Glenn. I can't imagine you doing
My wife would love to see that happen, but yeah.
Well, my husband was with me, and you know Greg. You know he's as big and large as life.
Yeah, he's a lot like I am that way. Yeah,
it was pretty hard for him, but boy, he had some big aha moments for himself as well. So it's just a nice quiet thing to do. You know, horses love that quiet being beside them. They don't, it kind of freaks them out if we're loud and boisterous. So it's just getting on the same page as them. If you take a little bit of time and just see what that's like operating in silence.
I will. I'll try that. I always think the horses are happy to hear us chitter chattering all around. But somebody just showed me this little video of have you heard about the new trick with the putting the duct tape down the middle of the nose for calming a horse? Supposedly they're calling it the duct tape twitch. But somebody took the duct tape though and put it over the mouth of the owner, which said actually that brought down the adrenaline of the horse. So I'm going to try that, a whole day of silence around my horse.
All right. Well, I look forward to hearing about it.
Oh, I can't tell you about it.
Come out of the silence, let us know.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Carol Herder of Cavallo.
Probably not the best idea for radio hosts.
Only when you have laryngitis. All right. Thanks again for joining us for today's Trainer's Tip.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts, and I'm dedicated to training horses without pain. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. Western, English, the beginner, or the advanced rider, it doesn't matter. You can connect with other students online too on our forum, and there's a new lesson every week. It's a lifetime of learning for you on my Equus Online University at MontyRoberts.com.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged. January 9th, we've got a night of inspiration coming up at Flag Is Up Farms in Solvang, California. Then on March 19 and 20, we have a Wild at Heart with Pat Roberts, fun weekend for women and men. And then on the 21st, right after that, that's the Monday following, we've got a Horse Sense for Leaders, which is a corporate training type that we're having a lot of fun with at Flag Is Up Farms in Solvang, California.
And you can find lots more at MontyRoberts.com, where you can find Monty's calendar and a whole bunch more stuff. If you are old school, you can call 805-688-6288. And for details about today's show, go to HorsemanshipRadio.com, where you can find links and photos and more information about today's guests and topics. As always, we just love your feedback. If you've got questions about things, we want to hear from you. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Monty Roberts, on Twitter at twitter.com/Monty_Roberts, and you can listen to lots of podcasts on our app. The Horse Radio Network app features the Horsemanship Radio Show and lots more. Download it today for your Android or iPhone. Just go to your app store and type in Horse Radio Network.
Wonderful. And many thanks to our sponsors. We've got Omega Fields, IFA.com, and Monty's Equus Online University. Be sure to visit all the other great shows, too, on Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. And until next time, have many happy horse hours.